the underground bunker of the Civitas Studio in Raleigh, North Carolina, it's Civitalk with your hosts, Brooke Medina and Ray Nothstein. We're here to connect culture with civics, making it relevant to your daily life. And dare we say, existence at a time where too many are triggered and offended. So, relax. But buckle up and let's wade into the deep end. What's really happening in your old North State?
Welcome to another edition of Civitalk. Today we're going to discuss the latest at the General Assembly, the NCAE press conference, the crazy woman in Bladen County. I think there's only one, so we'll talk about it.
I've been to Bladen County. There might be more.
And we're going to look at the mansplaining conference. Brooke has already signed up for this and is trying to lobby to get Donald to send her. So we'll discuss that and what she should expect there. And my son is doing swimming lessons, so we'll discuss that. First, though, Brooke, I want to bring something up. I'm springing this on you, but I know Leah's kind of angling for your position as co-host. And I do want to say that Leah and I agree more than you and I agree. So it could be easier.
Which is why you need me as the co-host.
I'm just saying it could be easier for me because Leah just agrees with me more. I think, you know, she's very smart, obviously. And
and what he didn't say was how much I challenge his thinking and cause him to become a better editor and person overall.
That's true. I'm just saying Leah agrees with me more. So
You're being shallow, right? And okay. I think I'm going to have to woman-splain to you.
So my son James is in swimming lessons now, and he did really good the second time. The first time, my wife has some funny videos of him actually doing it, but the teacher's holding him. He's two and a half. The teacher's holding him, and he's like going, "Mama, Mama." And there's a couple other girls who are a little bit older, and they're more water friendly, and so it's just funny.
Water friendly. So was he like? Do you think he had like nightmares later on that night?
No,
was it traumatizing or no?
No, he's just very. James is very dramatic. He's a good kid, but he can be very dramatic. He's very high maintenance. I never
like
met anybody
daddy.
As hot. No, that's not true. I am high maintenance, but not as much as him. He's ridiculously high maintenance.
If you're going to talk smack to me out the gate, then I'm just saying.
No,
you're...
My son will have a blanket around him, and it won't be pulled up all the way, and he'll call you from the other room to pull his blanket up onto his chest.
Oh, that's cute.
Or he's like got something, a toy, and then a little will be like within arm's reach, and he'll be like, "Can't reach it," and he's not extending his arm. He's extending his arm like it's a claw arm. He's
like a T-Rex arm.
Yeah, he's like, "Can't reach it." So
cute. Well, you know, swim lessons can be rather traumatizing unless you have like a child that is fairly fearless, but kind of this first introduction into the water can be scary. And I remember when my oldest son, Eli, who is 13 now, I took him to swim lessons when he was about 3 years old. And you know how cats feel about water.
Mm-hmm.
That's how he felt about water. Hated it. And so he starts kicking and screaming and just like freaking out. And it's an indoor pool at a YMCA. There's a bunch of older people that probably have grandkids. And so, you know, usually those people that have grandkids are way more sympathetic to little kids than parents who have kids your kid's age. You know, they're like, mm-hmm. I see you. I understand the struggle you're going through. These older ladies were judging me like nobody's business. And one of them followed me into the locker room later because I made my son stay in the water. And he kept screaming. I mean, he stayed in the water with the swim instructor. And he kept asking me to let him go out. I said, "No, you have to keep practicing." And so then I finally let him out after about 10 minutes and he vomited in the water because he cried so much. And so the ladies follow me into the locker room and they said, "You were way too hard on him," and trying to scold me for trying to help my kid learn how to swim.
Yeah, there's a lot of busybodies out there.
There are. I mean, because if he ever falls in the water, I needed him to know how to save himself, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, that's what you want. That's your biggest fear as a parent, is a child or drowning, or even a child you don't know drowning. I mean, it's a crazy fear.
You want them
fear.
To know that skill so that they are not vulnerable.
I've been trying to tell James that, you know, in his blood, in his genes, that he's a swimmer because I was a competitive swimmer for a long time. I won't get into my exploits or my Speedo body or anything like that. But
did you really wear Speedos?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was.
Did you have like a favorite pair?
In my thinner days, no,
sparkly.
Not necessarily a favorite pair. I think when I was real little, I had like a Stars and Stripes one, but but I don't have a favorite pair. Yeah, but I try to tell him, you know, swimming's in his blood, and he kind of gives me a weird look sometimes. But I taught swimming lessons in college, And I can remember the parents sitting on, you know, the moms would come on the Navy base and they'd watch the kids and stuff. I can't believe I'm admitting this, but there was sometimes some really babies that were, the kids that were just babied too much. Mm-hmm. And I remember like the parents not looking and I'd put the kid's head underwater for like 5 seconds and I'd be like, see, you're still alive, you know? But I was an effective teacher. I got those kids to be really good, you know?
You were like, Major Pain. Did you ever see that movie?
Yeah. Good film.
Major Pain. Yeah. To me, you sound like the swim instructor version of a drill sergeant.
Yeah, I was tough on those kids, but I wanted the best for them. And, you know, if you could like...
You grew up in a military home like I did. Our parents probably parented a little bit differently than civilian population.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people like you and I, we wandered the base without any kind of supervision at young ages. You could do that.
One of my friends, like her dad, though, when they were getting punished, he would make them do push-ups and sit-ups and things like that.
Oh, yeah,
It was just more regimented, right. And you weren't allowed to be pansy-ish.
So. Yeah, and I got good feedback on the swimming lessons I taught. So, you know, I was a little harsh sometimes, but the kids, I knew that they would be okay. I mean, they were ultimately tough kids, even when they were being a little bit baby.
Right. So. Well, and you understand.
So don't freak out if you're listening to this and call child services or anything.
No, you teach them how to survive, essentially. I mean, I think swimming is one of those skills that kids should learn early on.
Yeah, or earlier the better for sure.
So, Ray, are you going to this mansplaining convention or signing Kelly up for it?
No, I actually thought about Kelly as a potential person to go to this because I know she goes to a lot of like conferences in higher ed, and I thought this would be good for her. So all the speakers are male.
Yes, it's called the Make a Women Great Again Conference.
Oh, okay.
And it's a three-day seminar.
That's a good conference. I mean, I'm all for that.
Because women clearly aren't great anymore. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm just saying, you know, you always want to grow and reach your full potential. But that includes both genders.
That does. Yeah. Wait, there's only two genders?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
Excuse you.
We're about
you,
to get
Ray.
Taken off the air.
Excuse you.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, actually, it's called the 22 Convention, but the tagline is Make Women Great Again. And it is, it's in Orlando, Florida. And it promises to be a mansplaining palooza on teaching women how to drop extra pounds, land a husband, pop out loads of kids, and say no to the toxic bullying feminist dogma.
Popping out loads of kids and being super thin is not easy. So I applaud women that can do that.
It took me a solid 2 years after each kid to get back to like pre-pregnancy weight and everything. And it was a lot of work. I'll just tell you that. But
I'm sure women love to be told by men, you know, all their flaws and how they can get better. So
here's how you can lose the weight.
Yeah.
Here's how you can be more feminine and less you right now. So no, that just, it's incredibly off-putting. I'll be honest with you. There is a certain demographic of the female population that will be drawn to this.
You don't want Corey D'Angelo or what's his name or those type of people telling you that how to be a better woman?
No, I don't. I don't. I feel like I've been, disclaimer. I've been a woman all my life and I feel like I have a good handle on it. And of course, we can all improve and there are areas to do that. But this whole mansplaining convention, I see it just as it is a veer to the other extreme in response to this extreme feminism, right? And so when we're looking to avoid one ditch, the danger is to swing this pendulum and go into the next ditch. Rather than a common sense middle of the road, we can celebrate the gender differences that we have as men and women. I think they're wonderful. I'm very glad I'm a female. I don't want to be a male. I don't want to be manly. But I don't feel like I need a lecture from these men to help fight back the toxic bullying feminist dogma.
What I hope happens, Brooke, is that some feminists actually see that and think it's like, you know, a anti-male type convention and show up. Yeah, by accident.
Oh my.
That would be awesome.
That would be something that would definitely make its Twitter rounds and video, like the showdown.
Oh yeah, there would definitely be meltdowns.
Yeah, like think Rosie O'Donnell meets, who's a Stefan, that really toxic masculine guy on Twitter who talks about how women shouldn't wear high heels and that if they have red lipstick on, they're trying to like send some subversive message.
Wow, I don't know.
Yeah, he's crazy. Hmm. Okay, well, since you don't know him, but either way, look him up online later on.
But if you are going to that conference, do feel free to contact us and give us feedback because we'll have a follow-up show and maybe have a guest. If you went to the conference and or you're planning on going to the conference, reach out to us and you can come into the studio and we'll talk to you.
Yeah, I'd be curious to hear if my assumptions about this conference are correct. I am open to being made wrong on this front. I hope I am, but it sounds a little toxic in its own way, in my opinion. But hey, let's talk about something.
I'm not going to judge. I'll let Brooke judge. Yeah. I'm not going to judge people that go to that.
Okay, well, I am. let's go ahead and move on over to this General Assembly drama that happened on Tuesday, January 14th. And so you're listening to this a few days after this has happened. But surprise, there's no budget veto override. The General Assembly came together because Governor Cooper had vetoed a budget last year.
Because of Medicaid expansion.
That's what he said was because of Medicaid expansion, and that the budget that the Republicans had drawn up prioritized corporations and corporate tax cuts over educators, which is ridiculous because he's the one that issues tons and tons, millions of dollars in cronyist corporate packages for big corporations like Swiss Bank and Microsoft and things like that. So there is no new budget. We're going to continue moving and using the budget that we had in 2018, I think, right?
I think that's correct.
Yeah, so we're going to just keep this other biennium budget that we had already passed.
There were some mini budgets passed, which included a raise for some state workers, but Governor Cooper didn't want to give a raise to teachers in the sense that it wasn't enough. That was his line of reasoning. He wanted...
How would you feel if someone said, oh, I wanted you to have a better raise, so when they offered you a 3.9% raise or 3.6%, I told them no, thanks.
Yeah,
no,
I mean, it's like, let's say, you know, the president at Civitas said, I'm giving you this, and then the board says, nope, that's not enough for Brooke, so they don't come to an agreement.
Just let her keep doing her job at the other pay. I would be offended by that. But apparently they're politicizing it, though. So Governor Cooper, the North Carolina Association of Educators, the NCAE, which is essentially a union here in the state, or they're attempting to unionize, they held a press conference there on Tuesday. I actually attended that with Leah Byers and Bob Libke, our policy director, and just listened to the misinformation and misleading claims that they were making. And just this entire conversation around educator pay, they kept using the word respect and weaponizing teachers, or weaponizing this message in a way to try to alienate teachers from conservative fiscal policy and make it seem as if teachers aren't respected. And it's unfortunate because the teachers are caught in the crosshairs. And we've seen the federal government do it with military pay. They politicize that oftentimes and try to, you know, whenever there's a government shutdown, talk about the soldiers and stuff like that. And I see it at the state level here with the teachers, and it's a shame.
Yeah, and I think the Republican General Assembly overall has passed like a 20% raise or something since 2010
over the past,
on
like five
teacher
pay raises. Yeah. It's about that much.
So there's been a dramatic increase. Some of this comes off the heels of the Great Recession and the state struggles in terms of the budget, and Republicans or Democrats raising taxes, and you know, just a whole slew of messes when it come to the budget. And Republicans have done a good job in North Carolina in terms of turning the state around from a fiscal and just fiscal responsibility and a budget aspect. So that's the good news. But you're right. I mean, I'd be upset if I was a teacher, because I'd rather have something than nothing. And of course, Cooper and his cronies and the Democratic Party here are saying, well, you know, we can win on this issue politically, so we'd rather have them have nothing. They're going to stick with us anyways, and we're going to make this, you know, our big issue in the 2020 campaign. But I mean, you are playing with real people's lives here. And so, you know, and here I just remember this statement from Senate leader Phil Berger. I thought this made a lot of sense. He did say that teachers were getting a little less this budget because they wanted to focus on some other state workers who had been neglected in past budgets. So that makes sense. I mean, it makes sense to me.
Money doesn't grow on trees. We have to allocate it responsibly and in ways that make sense. And to be honest, the teacher pay issue is just one component of the state funds and the revenues, right, and how they need to be allocated. And yeah, a lot of these other state workers have not received a raise.
Right. Republicans were getting trapped on this, and whatever they proposed was never enough. So I think for them to just say this is what it's going to be and that's what it is, and it was 3.9% over 2 years, and stick with that, I think was actually a smart move. I know that they made a last-minute deal for 4.4% if the Senate would vote to override the veto. The dissenting senators and the other party would help override the veto, but that didn't happen. So, I mean, you really have politics being played here with teachers, and it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate to me that Cooper is using them for basically kind of his scraps or his collateral damage or collateral protection for his 2020 campaign. But if they're fine being used in that way, then they're fine being used in that way, and that's what the union is okay with. So.
Well, and the thing is, though, Bob just wrote something on our website, and it should be on our homepage, and it says NCAE continues to lose members and revenue. Shouldn't someone ask why? And so when you do the math and make some educated guesses on the actual NCAE enrollment numbers, which aren't public, but you can draw some conclusions based on other data. Only about 15% of the current teacher population are NCAE members. And so they claim to speak for these teachers, but really, you think about it, one out of every 10, maybe two out of every 10 teachers actually align probably with the NCAE to it, the degree that they're actually willing to pay dues for their quote-unquote services.
Yeah, I mean, teachers obviously are going to be a homogenous group like the entire population. There's certainly some that are conservative. There's some that are going to stick with the NCAE and see them as, you know, their bully pulpit and their protector. But yeah, I mean, it's an important issue. And I wrote a little short piece today about Cooper thinks he's winning on the politics on this issue. And maybe he will short term. Maybe it will help him get reelected. But I think ultimately having this much education focus in the news is actually good for the school choice movement, because it's going to raise deeper questions about what's the purpose of education. And it's going to bring out the point more and more, no matter how much more money we throw at this issue, and money can help in certain areas, but the more and more money is creating a flat line of outcomes. And so that's just going to continue on. I mean, there's been a study by Cato Institute, I think, that covers the last 20 years or even maybe further than that. We've seen the federal spending on education and state spending on education has not produced better outcomes. So it's time to try something different. It's time to, like Bob and others have proposed, get rid of this teacher salary schedule and allow principals and superintendents to set pay and let teachers negotiate for their pay and let teachers that are good teachers be rewarded, and bad teachers that are bad teachers, frankly, they're not going to get raises. They're not going to be compensated financially for their wreck or what they do in the classroom if it's a disaster.
That's a healthy feedback loop, right? Yeah. I mean, when the value we create or our work performance is tied to our pay, it's a healthy incentive that plays out in so many other parts of life and other parts of the labor market. And so for them to thwart that by these salary schedules does create a lot of conundrums and perverse incentives to not even try. And meanwhile, those teachers that are doing exceptional jobs do not get the compensation that they deserve either. So it's a mess. But before we move on to this Bladen County Board of Elections craziness, I think there's something to be said, though, about the hypocrisy of those like Governor Cooper and Senator Wiley Nickel and Senator Natasha Marcus at the General Assembly. These are vocal anti-school choice opponents. Anti-school choicers. And they regularly talk about how, you know, charter schools need to be either closed down or opportunity scholarships need to be diminished and things like that. Yet these are the same individuals like Cooper, Nickel, and Marcus. They sent their children or attended themselves private schools that cost thousands and thousands of dollars each year in tuition. And yet they're denying other people the same sort of educational opportunities just because of the zip code they live in or that because they're low income. To me, that's so unwoke.
Yeah, I mean, this has been a big problem with limousine liberals for generations. I mean, that's a term that, you know, came about for a reason. I mean, there are a certain segment of the left, and it's pretty large, that is very do as I say, you know, do as I say, not as I do. And that's continued on. I mean, I remember when Obama, I think when Al Gore moved to D.C., you know, they were talking about they're going to put their kids in public schools at one time. No, it never happens. People that go to Washington and work in our government, they're not putting their kids in D.C. public schools. And, you know, what we're asking for and what parents all across the state of North Carolina are asking for is to have the same opportunities that wealthy individuals that are well-connected have. And I don't think that's too much to ask. And if the outcomes aren't improving with more spending, then why can't we open this up and give people more access to school choice? And, you know, the thing is, I've always said is that even if you have a great public school, it doesn't mean it's a great fit for every child. It really has to do with You know, one size doesn't fit all here. And I think that's an important, is just finding the right fit for the child so they can excel and they can go on and flourish in their entire life. And education just doesn't mean one thing mm-hmm. to one person. So, you know, a lot of times bureaucrats act like they have all the answers to education. So they go and tell the peons what's best for their kid. And it's not that way. I mean, everybody's different. Every family values different things. Now we live in a very pluralistic society, whether you like that or not. And it's important, I think, to give families freedom to help their kids excel and set them up for the best life that they can have.
100% agree. And I think that really, until we are able to get at least a general consensus, and maybe we don't even need this because you talk about being in a pluralistic society, but just some sort of way in which we can define education and move it a little bit further away from this whole notion that it has to do just with standardized test scores and these particular scope and sequence learning outcomes. Education is so much more than that. I heard someone say this and it sounds poetic, so it might actually make and do some eye rolls, but they said education is the unfolding of the soul. Like it is something that requires an engagement of the mind, the will, the emotions, the spiritual and the physical, the transcendent and the tangible. And so I think until we're actually able to look at education more holistically, we're going to continue to run into these walls. But
I completely agree.
Yeah, let's go ahead though and talk about this because our audience needs to know what's going on in Bladen County. The county, of course, that has so much drama around it, led to that congressional special election when Mark Walker, he won by 900 votes, and it seems like he won because of some absentee ballot harvesting. So there was that drama in Bladen County, but go ahead and tell us about this other new revelation in Bladen County.
Yeah, so the Bladen County Board of Elections, Bladen County Board of Elections member Patricia Shepherd, they decided that they were going to nix the Pledge of Allegiance. She made this statement at the meeting. This is kind of funny, so I thought I'd read this. "I have not decided who I will support in 2020, but it will not be a racist, sexist, lying, adulterous, sexual, deviant moron like Trump."
Oh, my.
I thought that was funny.
Nonpartisan Bladen County Board of Elections issuing statements like that. Okay.
But they voted not to include the pledge. I guess they were saying the Pledge of Allegiance previously, and they voted along party lines, Democrats voting for this, Democrats or Republicans voting against. They're not to include the Pledge of Allegiance from the agenda of their public meetings. And so obviously there was some blowback from that. And I guess some citizens that were there decided to stay at the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yep, they decided. They stood and said an impromptu Pledge of Allegiance, according to Andy Jackson, our elections policy analyst. And that was enough to trigger Thompson, who said the police would be on hand to enforce the ban on the Pledge of Allegiance in future meetings. So not only did the Board of Elections there in Bladen County decide not to open their meetings with the pledge, but if you decided to disrupt the meeting by reciting the pledge, you could be forced out by law enforcement.
I'm kind of picturing like OJ in the Bronco chase, someone saying the Pledge of Allegiance and like going down the highway or something in Charlotte trying to evade law enforcement.
Can you imagine? Oh my gosh. But there are some updates to this as well. So after that significant blowback, of course, because of that ridiculous decision, Governor Cooper's office had to weigh in, which this woman, let's see, there were two women that were involved with this, the board member Patricia Shepherd, and then the
Thompson.
Let me see. I'm sorry, I'm looking for the other name here, but Chairwoman Luella Thompson
and Deborah Bell.
So these, Governor Cooper appoints these people to these boards, or at least the chairwoman. And Governor Cooper's office said the governor leads the Pledge of Allegiance before every Council of State meeting. He doesn't agree with the action taken, and he thinks it's good practice to say it before the Board of Elections meetings. And so let's hope that he communicated that directive with Thompson. But it sounds like she got the message, because later on she backed down.
Yeah, she's not going to be able to overtake the governor on that issue. And obviously, Cooper, for political purposes, is not going to come out against the Pledge of Allegiance.
That would be such a bad move.
Career suicide. But yeah, it's just funny to see sort of the goofiness. I mean, my take on it is if you weren't saying the Pledge of Allegiance, I could see a problem like adding it or something, just because maybe there's some time constraints. But if you've been doing it always, why are you now deciding that you don't want to say the Pledge of Allegiance? It's like you're trying to create some kind of scandal or some kind of public outcry. I mean, you're asking for it. It's like pouring gasoline on a fire. Mm-hmm. So that to me is just complete goofiness or silliness.
Especially in Bladen County of all places. Yeah. I think that just the optics alone of that just make them much more susceptible to further scrutiny, as if they weren't already receiving this bad rap. So it was just poor judgment on their part. No one is obligated to say the Pledge of Allegiance. Like you said, it's already something that's built into the meeting. So to go ahead and remove it and create this controversy, that just, you know, smells of drama mama-ness. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, but okay, you guys, well, I think we're about wrapped up for the week, and we have got a lot of stuff that we're going to be covering this season, this election cycle. Things are going to continue to escalate, sadly, I think, but as we get closer to the Democratic nominee, we will have thoughts on that. But we don't want to forget to remind you guys that we have a really fun conference coming up,
yeah,
don't we?
Yeah, CLC, so get in contact with Carrie. Go to nccivitas.org.
Or civitascLC.org.
Or civitascLC.org and get your tickets, because it's going to be a lot of fun. We'll hang out with you and continue to read all our content at nccivitas.org. We'll be so excited to meet you. So if you're a listener to the podcast, please come to CLC and come up to Ray or Brooke and I, and we'll talk to you. We'll hang out with you. We'll have a lot of fun.
Sounds good. We'll talk to you guys later.